Hi there, and welcome to A Different Way of Seeing. Have you ever wondered how a disabled person lives their life? Join our host, Lois Drachen, as she chats to people about work, education, travel, sport, the arts, and leisure, and the tools and techniques they use to live their lives with the disability. And now, on with the show.
Hi there, it's Lois. If you're a person with a disability who's wanting to achieve a goal and is looking for some help to get there, then maybe I'm the person you need to talk to. Listen after the interview and find out more details of how I can help you to reach your goals and dreams. Thanks today to Hindenburg Pro for assisting us in producing the show. That's Hindenburg.com. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. Hi there, and welcome to today's episode of A Different Way of Seeing, a podcast where we talk all things disability. I'm your host, Lois Drachen. Today we are chatting with Taryn Tomlinson, who is a return guest on the show. It's great to have Taryn back with us. And we're talking specifically about smart cities. Now, I've heard the term. I kind of have a vague concept of what a smart city is, but I've never really explored the implications, the benefits, the costs, as it were, of including smart city technologies. And not just for people with disabilities, but for all inhabitants of that city. And this is what Taryn and I are going to be chatting about today. So Taryn, welcome back. How are you doing?
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be back. Always good to be back. I'm well. Thank you.
It's been a very long time since we've chatted to you on the podcast. I think the last time we spoke to you, we discussed your trip up Kilimanjaro. So that was back in the days when I was focusing on accessible travel. Well, understandably, that's the field that you often work in, but and it's more or less what we're going to be talking about today as well. Well, accessibility at least. So for those who haven't had the opportunity to meet you yet and get to know a little bit about you, can you just give us a brief overview of who you are and a little of your story?
Absolutely. So, firstly, as I said, thank you so much for having me back again. And it's always lovely to connect with you and to be here. But for those who haven't heard, anything about me or my story, my name is Taryn Tomlinson. And I would describe myself as a passionate advocate, not just an advocate for persons with disabilities, but prior to getting into the hospitality and tourism industries, I actually had a nonprofit organization helping underprivileged youth with music and art therapy. And I did that for 10 years working with the Department of Social Development. And so my passion and my background really is social development, but it's also from marketing and the media industry. So I would say that I'm someone who has learned how to use the media in order to advocate and to bring about change in society. And really my journey has been shaped by personal experience as a person living with a disability. I started using a wheelchair at the age of 19 due to rheumatoid arthritis. Before that, I was, an able-bodied person and, experiencing life. And it all happened very suddenly. And that was the result of it. And through that, I still had my passions to travel and to explore. And I went to live in Italy and made that dream come true. So my journey was shaped by necessity because of where I found myself in, and that opened up a whole new passion. And I founded a company called Livable Universal Access Consultants, and we helped the hospitality industry by helping them understand the economic value of persons, travelers with disabilities and their families, and how to provide better services and access for them. And then with our travel concierge able to travel, we then provide information to our clients as to which establishments, which restaurants, what activities are accessible so that we can facilitate that partnership and that transition, because we know that, unfortunately, so many things are not accessible. And then adding to that, we've also branched out into the technology world, and we've created, as far as we know, the world's first universal access AI. And she will assist governments, designers in being able to assess buildings. And so getting into that smart city discussion, Lois, it's very much the direction of where we as Livable see ourselves playing in.
Great. Now, just to clarify, you yourself live with a mobility condition, and the services that you offer, do you also consider other disabilities in the work that you're doing?
Absolutely. So that's, you know, when we speak about universal access, you know, firstly, we have to think broader than just persons with disabilities, even greater than just persons with disabilities. Because very, very often when people think universal access, they think accessibility, or they think persons with disabilities.
Or physical access, yeah.
Yeah, physical access. And it's far, far greater than that. It's really about looking at the human experience from birth to, you know, the senior years and until the very last years, and how the body changes and the body's needs changes and the way we interact with our environment changes. And so it's about how do we design products and spaces to be utilized by the maximum amount of people without the need for special adaptation, without the need for, you know, an add-on or something special, just great design from the get-go. But of course, when we look at, you know, the most marginalized societies out of all our persons with disabilities, and that includes mobility impaired, visual impairments, hearing impairments, as well as invisible, you know, disabilities. So often we forget about neurological impairments and how people actually process the environment. And though they physically, you know, might seem fully able-bodied, they are actually struggling. And very often, you know, experience just as much or even a harsher discrimination when people do, because one kind of, it's like when you're in a wheelchair, people can see you in a wheelchair, they give you some lenience, right? When you've got an invisible disability, people can't see it. And so they start attributing other stuff to you, like you're slow or you're stupid or, you know, those kind of harsh, you know.
And words. I think it's very, you're very right. And it's very good to see that more recently the awareness of invisible disabilities is coming more into our everyday society and our awareness. So it's really been great to see that. But
sorry. To add on to that, yeah. So yes, look, but you know, as you know as well, with access, it's I also think with universal access, you're never going to be able to cater to everybody in society, and we have to leave room for error, you know, tolerance for error. In fact, and I'm talking about human error. So just recently, I know, and I thank you so much for making that comment on our LinkedIn. But we had recently hired, you know, a tech, what do you call this, social media person. And though I'd given him a couple of instructions, he's got the manual, you know, as to our guidelines and stuff. It's normal error that when it's not someone in someone's, you know, thought process to, you know, when it's not top on mind, these kind of things step up. And it's so funny that within the seven principles of universal design, tolerance for error is one of the, you know, principles. And so thank you so much for pointing that out and that learning experience that we all go through. And also knowing that this is about how, as we just spoke now, you know, you said about the transcripts and how do we make things as accessible as possible for everybody? Knowing that everybody also means me, right? Yeah. I mean, I could also have, even though I've got a wheelchair user, something could happen where I lose my visual abilities tomorrow, you know, and then, you know, I'm with Lois and the two of us are learning, you know, life together in a new way. So, yeah, it's just like there is no us and them.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So moving then into the conversation about smart cities. What is a smart city and how does it differ from a traditional city in terms of technology and infrastructure and that kind of thing?
So firstly, we have to look at traditional cities, the way that they are, the way that they've been designed, or the urban planning of traditional cities or the cities that we live in was done very differently. And it was done not taking a full spectrum of things into account. Mm. You know, our cities happen, you know, whether it is for some economic opportunity, people flood, you know, a particular place because they come to work. It starts out with informal, you know, settlements. It comes in with urban planners, but we know in apartheid in South Africa, we've got our own special story with how urban spaces have been planned to divide people. Okay. But in their planning, because our numbers of people were also much lower then, and people didn't account for population growth and for all of these other, you know, pollution and the way the rate at technology and people moving, migration of people in such masses and tourism, of course, there's a huge strain on our urban systems, right? Which results like traffic, carbon emissions, which is negatively harming our environment. And it is also because of the way that it's built, not taking all of our needs into consideration. It also negatively impacts the people who live in the environment. So a smart city leverages technology and data to improve the efficiency of urban systems using, like IoT, so Internet of Things devices, which is sensors, you know, using AI, using data analytics to optimize services such as transportation, the energy efficiency, public safety, all of those things to say that, guys, we've made a huge problem. We're sitting with huge global problems and we cannot go about business as usual. And the only way that we can run smarter cities is to have data.
Okay, so at a fundamental level then, how would that then impact not so much the design of a city, because we're not experts in that field, but the experience of the inhabitants of that city? How would they be using the IoT, the AI, the data, and incorporating that into the systems? Or is it a behind-the-scenes infrastructural change?
I think that when we look at smarter, it's probably, well, the way I'm understanding it or have come to understand it, it's an integration of both. And that's why you have, you know, commercial IoT and your commercial Internet of Things would be, for example, using your Apple smartwatch, right? Where it's able to monitor your body vitals.
Yeah.
And it can give you information, but that same information can be set up to alert people, for example, who are close to you, you know, like your mother, let's say, for example, is at work. She can get an update onto the state of her child, you know, using an IoT device, right? Okay. So you can see how IoT devices can be used within the home. And when we look at, you know, the greater city, And the greater urban structures, we can use it, for example, to monitor traffic, right? So where sensors are there to say, oh, okay, this is there's traffic congestion over here. But if, let's say, all of the people have access to some kind of app that they can get notifications of where the traffic is. And we have applications like that now, like that Waze or Waze or something like that, that alert you to say that there's traffic on that side, don't go that way, go this way. And so these are the ways that it's both the Internet of Things, the devices that we can use for personally, for our own environments, but it's also the sensors that the cities will utilize in order to measure certain things within the city.
Okay, that kind of brings it home to me. And I suppose just broadening that example a little more to say, it would be possible to know when the next bus is due and what bus it is.
And if it's full.
And what the train, you know. Okay, so it's using the electronic systems and the internet systems and the data that is technologically available, and saying, how do we best use that to essentially make our lives better?
Absolutely. That's exactly what it is. So that we can regulate things, use data to regulate things better. If I'm just thinking, as a person with a wheelchair,
we're going to get onto that one. We're going to get onto this in a little more detail, I think. Okay, so well, let's take it one step then. So we're still sticking with not specifically the disability community, but just the general concept. The key benefits of smart cities in terms of comfort, safety, convenience, quality of life. I think you've given us an idea, but how would you see the main benefits?
Yeah, so if just speaking about that, you know, the subject now, just on public transport, right? Convenience. Mm-hmm. You just mentioned it now. You know, you can get an update to let you know when the bus is actually coming, and now you can manage your time better. You know, and you can account for moment-to-moment changes. And that's what I love about it, because life is not static, right? Yes. Life is constantly moving. And if we look at the way that our mechanical systems have been built before, it's all very static, right? The train timetable says the train comes at 10, and it comes at 10:30, and it comes at 11. And it comes, but we know that that's not always the truth, because after the tram, something happens, a train track, they stole the cables. And so real-time data creates that convenience to let you know what is happening right now.
Okay. And in following on from that idea then, I can almost see that a lot of these technologies are already available out there, all out there. Some of them are being used, as you say, you know, Google Maps and Waze and things like that are already using that kind of technology. Are we talking about a consolidation of that information into one place?
And this is where the problem also, where lots of people have with this whole idea of smart cities and this big data and the consolidation, that data housed, who manages the data, you know, who has access to the data, brings up then other issues that we then need to have super, you know, cybersecurity in place, because having that kind of data would have,
It has implications.
Absolutely. But the thing is, and where I am, where I'm not against smart cities, is that a lot of these people that say, well, you know, it's a conspiracy theory and we're trying to get the data and trying to control people. And yet none of these people come forth with viable solutions to say, actually, we are on a ticking time bomb here. What is the solution then? if not having smarter access to? And what is the solution where we can build it so that the relevant parties have access to the information as it needs be, but that it cannot be used outside of those? Yeah.
And I think the other reality is that I'm not really certain that people understand how much of their information they are, by choice, making available. And that's not a topic that I'm qualified to get into, but, you know, I do have a lot of questions around the privacy issues that, you know, maybe I should speak to a cybersecurity expert and ask those questions and kind of try and find out, because, yeah, technology,
yeah,
information.
But you know, there's a lot of benefits though to what it offers, you know, in terms of safety as well.
Yeah, and sometimes it can be a, you know, everything's got advantages and disadvantages. It's kind of a question of prioritizing what is most valuable to you as an individual person. That, you know,
so you hit the nail on the head there. It has to do with what the values are. And in some integrated plans of cities that have utilized the integration of IoTs and AI to create smart cities, when they sit together and I think it was Norway that created this, and they sit together in their working groups, it was first, this is Norway. We are creating universal access and as part of our smart city plan. But what does a smart city mean to us based on our values as Norway?
Yeah.
It's based on the values. And we as a country, as a people, I have to say, as South Africa, what is our values, right? And from there, build out, because it needs to be built around a value. What do we value as a society? You know, and our values as a South African society might be different than the values of a Norwegian society, might be different than the values. And so once you know what you value, you know what you can monitor.
And I think the challenge, the joy, challenge, but not necessarily in a negative sense, of that is going to be because of the extraordinary diversity of our beautiful country as well. So what may be a value for one sector of our community may not necessarily be a value for other sectors. So based on that kind of idea, how can smart cities then ensure that accessibility is part of their infrastructure rather than an afterthought?
I think a couple of ways, and it's always, you know, the starting for me, it's to ensure that spaces and services are equitable, you know, that they are accessible, that we are creating inclusivity,
yeah,
right? And then also that you have different people adding to the discussion. You know, you can't just have able-bodied architects and engineers who have not done disability studies, who don't utilize, and even those able-bodied people who have done disability studies, you know, but we still don't utilize the lived experience or work together with persons with disabilities on those kind of, you know, plans. We need to, if you're going to build for society, you need to include society.
Yeah.
And that has been the fundamental problem of what has been happened before in our design. And then also you have to implement policies that mandate that these changes actually occur. And then we can use things like technology to actually make sure that we reach those objectives.
Yeah. And I think, you know, ultimately that's part of the challenge, isn't it? The cost. The the awareness, and you know, I see this even within the disability community, that often things that are being put out there for one target group, one sector of the disability community, are not even inclusive of the others. And I'm not wanting to point any fingers, but you know, I have noticed a number of, say, Facebook posts, it says keep just something simple, and or social media posts being put out by, say, organization X, who looks after the X community, and they're not inclusive of disability Y or disability Z. So, you know, we always have to start even closer to home within our own community. But that, again, is a different discussion. So I'm trying very hard not to let myself be pulled down little rabbit holes. As smart cities are relying so much on digital technologies, how do we make sure that people who are marginalized and, you know, people with disabilities, people who don't have access to the technology because of poverty, people who have typically been excluded from the planning process, how do we make certain that they're included, that they're not left behind in this implementation? I know a lot of people aren't using technology. So what about them?
Yeah. Well, one of the things is that we have to say as well, you know, that globally we are moving more and more towards having technology integrated in all aspects of society. Technology is becoming cheaper and cheaper. And as it becomes cheaper and cheaper, more and more people will have access to it. So when we look at smart cities, yes, it lies on technology. But if we look at the way smart cities are designed, the data that is gathered should be about enhancing the overall life of everybody in it, regardless if they have money or not. So, for example, if you're putting up sensors in a city to monitor, let's say, for example, carbon emissions, right? That is not necessarily, I mean, the person, you know, who doesn't have money to purchase a cell phone, it doesn't need to have access to that information. Nobody needs to have access to that information, right? So there we see technology has been used by the governing bodies in order for them to get the right information. But if we look at how, if we look at like commercial Internet of Things, that's where the technologies where you personally use it to make your life better, to tap into, right? Different things. Then we need to look at affordable internet and devices. Okay, so the internet needs to be affordable and devices needs to be affordable. And we need to look at that by subsidizing, you know, access for digital, devices and internet for marginalized communities. And we know that lots of projects already out there that are doing that. Mm-hmm. And a lot of companies are also pushing for that. And then accessible design. So ensuring apps, websites, devices actually adhere to sustainability so that when you do put those devices and the internet in people's hands, they can actually access the information that is out there. And then I also think a good way to do it is also training programs, digital literacy workshops for persons with disabilities so that they understand the power of this technology and how to use it. Because I can tell you, I've got a lovely Mac, but even before this other computer, I know it's got wonderful accessibility features, but I don't know how, you know, all of the features and how it could help me, right? Because I get the thing, and the first thing I need to do is, you know, send out the urgent emails. So I haven't taken the time to really be trained on how this computer could be, you know, an amazing tool for me and actually help enhance my life. And so we need training programs, and then we need, you know, we need collaboration and support from organizations that can partner with the community, right? To create those design solutions and then reflect. So the same way that Google has, you know, workshop, they design something, they then go back and, you know, they look and they reflect on it, and then they come back. So there's not just one approach, but it's important to divide where smart cities are, or the information is used by our municipalities to manage the well-being of the entire city, and where IoTs, Internet of Things, for commercial ones, which then bridges the gap of personal health and well-being and ability to access places.
Okay. I think we're starting to get a really good idea of kind of how everything fits together, because it does sound like it's a very holistic kind of thing. But what you're suggesting there is it's a very holistic approach to the inclusion, but also the thinking and planning. So, and so often that is the case. I am curious about what you would say to people who are listening to this and going, but this sounds like a Clockwork Orange, Big Brother concept, with a reference there to the Anthony Burgess book, of the state or the city looking over our shoulders and watching everything that happens. What would you say to someone who has that fear?
I'd say, unless you've got some really big skeletons in your closet, what are you running from? Also afraid they're going to see. No, I'm being flippant, but
I know. But I think there is a point behind that.
The point behind it is that we've got grave issues in this world. People are dying. There is huge, you know, climate issues. We've got huge issues, and being stuck in this fear of, people are watching me, I don't want to give, you know, it reduces us to that fearful state. And what we do when we fear, we close off and we become isolated and insular. And the isolation and the insulation of people is exactly what gives rise to fear in the world. It creates the results, exactly what people are afraid is going to happen to them. Do you know what I mean? Like, It the more fearful we are, the more we don't engage, the more we don't share, the more we don't converse, and just living this the world that we live in is by and largely a result of that.
Yeah.
Right? The internet has allowed us to have access to so much more information, opportunities for sharing that grows, it expands. If we look at the human organism, if we think about the analogy of a city as being like the human organism, you know, we've got roads, which is the veins. We've got, you know, the fabric of our cities and the houses and the individual pieces that could be seen as our cells. You know, we've got spaces of community, which you could see as the organs that comes together and cleans out, you know, the systems and stuff like that. And we know that in order for our body to work well, the parts need to be only as healthy as your parts, right? Before, one part is going to inadvertently start negatively affecting the other part because now it needs to compensate. And so the only way that a healthy system works is when you have proper intracellular communication.
Yeah.
When the cells are actually communicating with themselves, and when you actually have mucus build up around the cells, they stop communicating. They become isolated, And so we see also the rise of you know, antisocial cells such as cancer, yeah. Right? We are meant to communicate, to be open. This fear that we live in is the very, in my opinion, and for me, this is just, you know, my personal point of view, but that fear that we live in is the very dividing factor that has made the world the way that it is now.
That's a good response. So then going back to the smart cities and particularly around the concept of disability, what are some ideas of how city planners, city designers, smart city implementers could really engage with the disability community to help them with the planning and the smart city initiatives?
Yeah, I think, you know, the process of including persons with disabilities in the design and in the planning stages.
Mm-hmm.
You heard? And I think one of the key problems also, as you said earlier on, you alluded to it when you said you often see that companies will choose, you know, one type of disability over another disability, right? I also think that one of the key problems is actually, you know, in the very design, that up until now, there's been very few people who actually do things like universal access.
Yeah.
Which advocates for a group. And so largely what happens, you have maybe a private company or a government body, and they want to include persons with disabilities. So they'll go to the representative of one. So they'll go to a deaf SA or blind SA, and then they get their input. And then they think, okay, it's fine. We've engaged persons with disabilities, and this is what we've got for the blind, or this is what we've got for the deaf. And it excludes everybody else still,
yeah.
Right? And so I think part of the parcel and problem has also been us as disability organizations or the bigger disability organizations to say, actually, in this kind of case, because you're speaking more holistically, there are other people or professionals that actually deal with that, you know, from the construction, from the design point. And we need to work with them to give, yes, our inputs. Right. And so that co-design, that is why having a panel of advisors is so good as a committee, so that you actually have those individual voices, right, who can then feedback. Because if you just go to one organization, that organization will be able to help you from that organization's perspective.
Yeah.
And sorry, not of the organization's perspective, but of its constituents' perspective.
Yes.
Right. And then,
well, you know, it could even be of that particular organization's thinking about the services they provide, the constituent parts of the.
You're right, because there's different organizations with different philosophies that might be advocating for the same group.
Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah, you're right. It could be either organizations, thought patterns, or, you know, so it needs to be, and that's why I believe in that advisory panels and panels, which different disabilities coming together, working then with persons, or if working with the architect who might be a person with a disability as well.
Yeah.
You know, even if the architect has a person with a disability, still they should utilize a group of people in terms of getting that knowledge or tapping into that knowledge. In community outreach, you know, hosting workshops, you know, having input from disability advocacy groups, making sure that people are always, you know, included in the conversation, or at least feel like they're included in the conversation. And I say at least feel, because the information is out there, they are able to access that information.
Mm-hmm.
And then also, you know, test smart city solutions with the end users so that you can refine the system before the implementation. So just as you need persons with disabilities involvement, and I see this very much in the built environment and when you're working on a project. So the person should be included at the start design stage already, but then they should be brought in, the end user. So in his case, persons with disabilities in this case, should be brought in before the system gets launched, so that you can just make sure that everything is running smoothly. Very often you see this with grab rails, for example. The grab rails are then bolted into the wall upside down or not in the right height that they are supposed to be. Then, so the design was there, but the implementation wasn't there. And then it renders the very, you know, device inaccessible. It doesn't do the job that it was supposed to.
Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely those, the co-designing with a group of people, you know, making sure that you do that community outreach to get that feedback from people, and then making sure that you are working with people from the beginning right to the end to keep refining those systems before implementation.
So working from there, then I'm kind of getting a sense that using those same networks, those same panels, to then start evaluating the implementation and the effectiveness of the smart city initiatives, that would be part of it. It's kind of after the fact, as it were.
Yes, absolutely. So when we look at, well, the thing is that we always need feedback, right, for those metrics and that data feedback. So yes, you then have India. So one, I'm just thinking like a, I'm just trying to think of an example where you could get data feedback. If I'm just thinking of my own example, as a wheelchair user, if I'm thinking about the waterfront, let's just say if at the waterfront you want to do actually is judge how many people use the facilities, how many persons with disabilities use the waterfront, you could easily set up a tracker in the lift door of the lift most closely linked to the accessible car park, right? The parking bay, a lift that can monitor and track how many wheelchair, when a wheelchair turn comes in, right? When someone comes through that's in a wheelchair, they can actually track, right? And once you can see how many people, then you can use that to see, oh my gosh, we actually have a lot of people using wheelchairs. We actually need to build more parking bays, right? So this is one way in which we need to keep evaluating, and keep, and that's through usage metrics and surveys as well. You know, asking, gathering feedback from the community. Also, because technologies and things are also changing at a rapid.
Well, I was going to just bring that up. Yeah. So what works now may not in 2 years' time.
Yes. Now, the difference there, Lois, I must say, though, that the nice thing and also the difficult thing about the built environment is that the built environment is generally static for a long time.
Yes. Yes.
You're going to build a ramp that's well done and you're going to build a staircase. We are going to use that now until that building is going to stand, right?
Yeah.
Until it gets tarnished. Sorry. So it doesn't really affect it there, but where it does affect it is if the ramp should become damaged through wear and tear, for example. Now there's big holes in, right? And now it makes it more difficult. Now, if you had a monitor that could kind of monitor through time how much wear and tear is on the ramp so that you know when to deploy people to fix it before the ramp is completely damaged, this is an amazing way of using a sensor or an IoT to keep monitoring that.
I was thinking almost more along the lines of, you know, it never really got adopted into South Africa, but beacon technology, which is a really useful tool to help people with visual impairments use their smartphones and navigate around somewhere like the waterfront or a similar big shopping center. And it may be that there are, in the future, different technologies that do that more effectively. So I think there's that aspect to it as well. And particularly when we're talking things like smart cities.
Absolutely. Because, I mean, those Bluetooth beacons, they provide location-based information, right?
Mm.
So I have those who, you know, and RFID tags. which I've also read about. I mean, I'm not actually sure what the full acronym is, but I was thinking about that for our app, as they enable tracking, you know, and guiding of mobility devices.
Yeah.
Right. So there's all of these amazing technologies and devices that will help you navigate space if you can tap into the information that's there. So now you, as a person with a visual impairment or blindness, can tap into the information that's already present, and this allows you to have access to that. You know, so I think that the benefits, particularly the benefits for persons with disabilities, far outweigh the fear of threat that we feel we have in utilizing this effectively.
That sounds like a good summary there. So if people would like to reach out to you, if they would like to find out more about you, about your work, how can they do so? Where do they find you?
Well, so they can visit at the website at Livable, so www.livablegroup.com. You can also find us on social media. On Instagram, it's Livable Design. On where was it? On Facebook, we are Livable Focus. And then if they would like to get hold of me via email, they can also contact me at taryn@livablegroup.com. And additionally, they can also tune into Able to Travel. Able to Travel is now accessible travel concierge side of the business. And there we are reachable at abletotravel.co.za. And that's a numeral 2. So Able to Travel.
Yeah. Perfect. Thank you so much. And I'll add all of those contacts into the show notes, and people then have them in a different format as well. So what do you think is the first step that a city like Cape Town would need to take in order to start becoming and using the smart city initiatives to become more inclusive of all of its residents?
Noah, for me, everything first starts with a mindset change. And I think that first, it's for the city to understand that when thinking about efficiency and society, you cannot build a system, or a system cannot function effectively if it doesn't take the full spectrum of the needs of society, right? So unless you are taking everybody into account, you're always going to be building ineffective systems, and it's going to result in money wastage, okay? So we need to understand that we have to account for all in order to make an holistic system that is actually going to work. And then secondly, we need to do a comprehensive accessibility audit. Okay, so of our infrastructure, our services, you need to understand the big picture of where you are now before you can actually change it. And so that's where it starts. It starts with the gathering of the current information that you need so that you can see where the gaps are and where the opportunities are. Then the city needs to develop a disability desk, a task force, I think the name also doesn't give justice to what it should be. Like, the city should have a universal access desk, right? Or universal access task force, because the problem here is not the person with the disability. It's the access that needs changing. It's the barriers that need, you know, breaking down in society. I don't know, like a barrier breaking task force or something. so that, you know, needs to be there so that not only that the information comes to a central hub, but that it gets dispersed to the right other departments, right, within government. And so that you can then work as well and have a consistent body to work and help guide and shape that inclusive roadmap and hold people accountable and make sure that everything is running smoothly. I find it crazy how as a government we don't have these, you know, departments in place. And so then, you know, these little task force on people's desks who actually have nothing to do with disability inclusion. And so there's not effective processes. So that's the first thing we need to do. We need to audit. We need to make sure we understand a clear map. We need to work with people to create that roadmap. And then we need to have a universal access desk or hub or task force that makes sure that people are sticking to it.
Taryn Tomlinson, thank you so much for coming and exploring the concept of smart cities with us. I've found this a really fascinating concept. And at least now I have a much clearer idea of not only what those strange words, smart city, really means, but how it can impact on the lives of the residents of a city. Well, not just the residents, but the people who are there, because we know that tourism is a big part of the Cape Town and for many cities as well. So, Taryn, thank you so, so much for being part of this conversation. It's been really fascinating.
Thank you for having me. Thank you for always having me and having such interesting topics. I must say, it's not an area of expertise for me, but it is a branch of our business that we have looked into and are building technologies so that we can contribute as well to the smart city revolution by making sure that we can provide cities and our governments and our municipality with that access data so that they can go and implement better changes for the future. And I really hope that I could come back on again next year to speak about the world's first AI assistant to help with access.
That sounds like a plan. Definitely something I would love to explore as well, because I do know a little bit about it and I'd love to know more about the process, the planning and the implementation of the AI tool. So, Taryn, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Lois. Have a wonderful day further.
Hi, it's Lois again. I'm not certain if you know, but I am a coach who works specifically with people with disabilities. If you have a disability and are wanting to achieve your goals, or maybe think through some of the challenges that you're facing in your professional or personal life, or want to take up a new opportunity, a new adventure, but just don't seem to be able to get to doing it, let's explore how I can help you. Hop onto the Contact Me form on my website, www.loisstrachan.com. That's Loisstrachan, LOISSTRACHAN.com. And sign up for a 30-minute discovery call so we can chat to see if I am the right person to help you to achieve your goals. Contact me now for that free 30-minute discovery call on loisstrachan.com. I'd love to have the opportunity of helping you to achieve your goals.
Thank you for listening to A Different Way of Seeing. We would love to connect with you. So find Lois at loisstrachan.com or Facebook, Lois Strachan Speaker. This podcast was edited by Craig Strachan using Hindenburg Pro. Hindenburg, it's all about the story. The credits are done at Naledi Media. Naledi Media, all your vocal needs under one roof. Read by Charlie Yazi. That's it for now. Thank you for joining us and see you next time when we bring you into the world of seeing differently.